The greatest story ever told is a true story. It is a story of adventures, battles, kings and queens, heroes and villains, good and evil, history and prophecy. It is your story. Come join the adventure of the Bible story. Chapter 209. Paul in prison at Caesarea. After fellowshipping with the brethren in Jerusalem, Paul decided to take a walk through the city. Trophimus, one of the Ephesians who had helped Paul bring the collection for the Jerusalem church, went along with him. He had a longing to see the sights of this fabled city. Paul showed him the location of Gamaliel's school, where he had spent so much time as a teenager. He talked about the streets where Jesus Christ walked. He showed him Pilate's lodging and the high priest's palace, where Jesus was condemned by the Jewish leaders. Paul walked Trophimus past the temple grounds, but did not take him inside. He knew doing so would offend Jerusalem's Jews. Trophimus was deeply moved by what he saw. Jesus Christ's life on earth became so real for him. He thanked Paul profusely for such a magnificent personal tour. Paul and Trophimus were so focused on the city sights that they did not notice several Jews following them. These wily spies were making plans to discredit God's apostle to the Gentiles. The following day, Paul and the company of men with him met with James and all the elders of Jerusalem. They brought with them the collection for the needy saints in Jerusalem, the effects of Agabus's prophesied famine, though started years earlier, was still being felt. James thanked them wholeheartedly for the much-needed help. Then everyone wanted to hear about the growth in the Gentile work. Paul told them particularly about the miracles and wonders God had done among them. James and the elders glorified Jesus Christ when they heard Paul's inspiring words. But then James had some bad news.
"You must listen to this,"
James said to Paul.
"There are now thousands of Jews who are believers, and they are zealous for the law of Moses. However, rumors are being spread that you teach all the Gentiles to forsake Moses. Many of the Jewish believers are being told that you are not only teaching that the Gentiles do not have to circumcise their sons, but that they should not follow the customs of Moses either."
"But that is not what I teach,"
Paul said.
"It wasn't all that long ago that I completed a Nazarite vow exactly according to the law."
This happened when he left Corinth and was sailing to Syria.
"That is all well and good,"
James said.
"However, since the Jews in Jerusalem will eventually know you are here, trouble will break out."
Then he explained how they might be able to ward off trouble. James' plan went like this. There were four disciples who had each taken a vow, and they needed to make a sacrifice at its completion. James suggested that Paul go to the temple area and purify himself with them. He believed that when the Jews witnessed Paul participating with these men, they would know that all the rumors were false. They would be able to see that Paul lived an orderly life by keeping the law. Paul agreed to do exactly as James instructed. At the same time, James also confirmed that the letter to the Gentiles from the First Jerusalem Conference was still valid. The Gentiles were not required to circumcise their sons. However, they were required not to eat meat sacrificed to idols, blood, or meat from animals that were strangled. And they were required to avoid fornication. The next day, Paul and the four men walked together to the temple. However, James' plan did not work. Paul and the four disciples entered the temple area, indicating that the time of their vow was nearing completion. They paid the proper amount of money for the temple sacrifices. Just as the vow's precise time was nearly completed and the sacrifice offered, several Asian Jews noticed Paul. They hated what he had accomplished while preaching in their homeland. Seeing him, these Jews flew into a rage and started screaming and yelling. They grabbed God's aging apostle and began to cry out to a crowd of Jews.
Men of Israel, help us!
Help us!
They yelled.
This is the man who teaches all men everywhere against us and the law of Moses. And he brought Greeks into this temple and has polluted God's holy place.
These were some of the Jews who had seen Paul walking around Jerusalem with Trophimus. They wrongly assumed that Paul brought him into the temple. These Jews were able to stir up the whole city. People dragged Paul out into the street. Those in the temple closed the doors so no one could re-enter the grounds. The crowd was about to kill Paul when news spread to the captain of the Roman garrison in Jerusalem that the Jews were rioting. He organized soldiers and centurions and ran to the mob. When the Jews saw the Roman soldiers coming, they stopped beating God's beloved messenger. The chief captain arrived on the scene, took Paul, and bound him with two huge chains. He demanded that the crowd tell him who the man was and what he had done. So many people shouted out different names and different accusations that the captain decided to take Paul to the Roman fortress on the edge of the city. The crowd followed, shouting,
"Kill him! Kill him!"
The people were so violent that to protect Paul, the soldiers had to carry him. It was a terrifying situation. Yet, what Paul did next was nothing short of amazing. As the Roman captain and his soldiers carried their prisoner up a set of stairs to enter the fortress, Paul asked the captain a question in the Greek language.
May I speak to you?
You can speak Greek?
The captain replied with surprise.
Then you are not that Egyptian fellow who some time ago started a revolution and led 4,000 armed terrorists out into the desert?
I am a Jew born in Tarsus in Cilicia, a citizen of an important city.
Paul answered,
"Please let me speak to the people."
The commander was impressed. He nodded his permission. With outstanding courage, the apostle stood confidently on the steps and motioned with his hand for the people to be silent. When they were quiet, Paul spoke to them in Hebrew.
My fellow Jews, listen to me as I make my defense before you.
Paul cried out. When the mob of Jews heard him speaking to them in Hebrew, they quieted even more. Paul was relieved that he had their attention and went on.
I am a Jew born in Tarsus, in Cilicia, but brought up here in Jerusalem as a student of Gamaliel.
He said,
I received strict instruction in the law of our ancestors and am just as dedicated to God as are all of you who are here today.
Paul confessed how he had persecuted to death the people who loved this way of life. He told them how he arrested both men and women and had thrown them into prison. He explained that he even brought Jews from distant cities back to Jerusalem to be punished. He encouraged them to go to the high priest and council to obtain proof of what he was saying. Then Paul fully explained about being on his way to Damascus to take more disciples back to Jerusalem for punishment, when he was blinded by a great light and then heard Jesus Christ speak to him. He discussed his time with Ananias, his baptism, and receipt of the Holy Spirit. Then he mentioned his vision in the temple when Jesus Christ told him to leave Jerusalem and preach to the Gentiles. Upon hearing the word Gentiles, the crowd went into a tumult. The Jews started screaming, tore off their clothes, and waved them in the air, and threw dust into the air.
Away with him! He is not fit to live!
That's right!
They yelled at the commander. The Roman ordered his men to take Paul into the fortress. He commanded them to whip Paul in an effort to find out the truth of why the Jews were so angry with him. However, when the soldiers tied him to a pole to be whipped, Paul said to an officer watching the scene,
"Is it lawful for you to whip a Roman citizen who has not been tried for any crime?"
When the officer heard this, he went to his commander immediately.
"What are you doing with this man?"
the officer said.
"He's a Roman citizen."
Both men were concerned. What they were about to do was illegal. The commander rushed to talk with Paul.
"Tell me truthfully, are you a Roman citizen?"
"Yes,"
Paul answered.
"I became one by paying a huge sum of money,"
the commander said.
"But I am one by birth,"
Paul replied. At hearing this, the commander and his officer became frightened. They could be severely punished for what they had done to Paul. The commander was unsure how to resolve this explosive situation, but he wanted to find out for sure what the Jews were accusing Paul of. The next day, he had Paul's chains removed and ordered the chief priests and the whole council to meet. Then the commander took his prisoner and made him stand before them. Paul saw many faces that he knew well. He thought it was interesting that he now stood before them as a prisoner for Jesus Christ. And he thought about the day Stephen had stood before him. Paul looked directly at the council he stood before as he addressed them.
"My fellow Israelites, my conscience is perfectly clear about the way in which I have lived before God to this very day."
The high priest, Ananias, ordered those who were standing close to Paul to strike him on the mouth. Paul absorbed the blow, composed himself, then turned his gaze directly to the man who had given the command.
"God will certainly strike you, you whitewashed wall,"
he said to him.
"You sit there to judge me according to the law, yet you break the law by ordering them to strike me."
"You are insulting God's high priest,"
yelled the men standing close to him.
"My fellow Israelites,"
Paul said apologetically,
"I did not know that he was the high priest. The scripture says you must not speak evil of the ruler of your people."
Knowing well the law, he recognized this was not a good beginning. Then he keenly observed that some of the group were Sadducees and others were Pharisees. He decided on a daring move to change the direction of the meeting.
"Fellow Israelites, I am a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee. I am on trial here because of the hope I have that the dead will rise to life."
He called out to the council. Immediately, the Pharisees and Sadducees started to quarrel. The Sadducees, who do not believe in the resurrection or in the existence of angels, clashed with the Pharisees, who believe both. Some of the scribes, who belonged to the Pharisees, stood up and protested strongly.
"We cannot find a thing wrong with this man.
Perhaps the spirit or angel really did speak to him."
The fighting between the two groups became so violent that the commander was afraid Paul would be torn to pieces. He ordered his soldiers to go down, retrieve Paul, and take him into the fortress. The apostle's life was spared again. That night, Jesus Christ appeared to Paul. Standing by him, he said,
"Don't be afraid. You have given your witness for me here in Jerusalem, and you must also do the same in Rome.
How great is our God that he personally encouraged his faithful messenger. The Jews could not believe Paul had escaped their grasp. The next morning, a group met together and devised a plan to kill Paul. More than 40 men plotted this sinister crime and took a vow that they would not eat or drink anything until they had accomplished it. Then they went to the chief priests and elders to include them in their scheme. Ananias and the other chief priests smiled broadly at hearing their plan. One of the conspirators told him,
"Now then, you and the council send word to the Roman commander to bring Paul down to you, pretending that you want to get more accurate information from him. But we will be ready to kill him before he ever arrives."
All the chief priests and the council agreed to carry out this deceitful and wicked plot. However, Jesus Christ still had some work for Paul to accomplish, and he intervened by using a young man, perhaps a teenager. Paul's nephew, the son of his sister, heard about the plot. He felt he needed to take action. He boldly went to the fort and told Paul about it. Hearing the news, Paul called one of the officers.
"Take this young man to the commander. He has something to tell him,"
Paul said. This officer was willing to do anything to help this Roman citizen. He took Paul's nephew to the commander.
"The prisoner Paul called me and asked me to bring this young man to you because he has something to say to you,"
he informed the commander. The commander took Paul's nephew by the hand, led him away for privacy, and asked him,
"What do you have to tell me?"
It was a youth in an intimidating situation, but he showed real poise and maturity, explaining in clear terms the truth he had come to learn, and that put Paul's life in danger.
"The Jewish authorities have agreed to ask you tomorrow to take Uncle Paul down to the council, pretending that the council wants to get more accurate information about him,"
the boy explained.
"Don't listen to them, because more than 40 men will be hiding and waiting for him. They have taken a vow not to eat or drink until they have killed him. They are now ready to do it and are waiting for your decision."
The commander was impressed at the youth's sincerity and earnestness. He considered him trustworthy.
"Don't tell anyone that you have reported this to me,"
he said, and he sent the young man away. The commander immediately called for two centurions to meet with him.
"Get 200 soldiers ready to go to Caesarea, together with 70 horsemen and 200 spearmen, and be ready to leave by 9 o'clock tonight,"
he commanded.
"Provide some horses for Paul to ride and get him safely through to Governor Felix."
Then he drafted a letter that said something like this:
"Claudius Lysias to His Excellency, Governor Felix, greetings. The Jews seized this man and were about to kill him. I learned that he is a Roman citizen, so I went with my soldiers and rescued him. I wanted to know what they were accusing him of, so I took him down to their council. I found out that he had not done a thing for which he deserved to die or be put in prison. The accusation against him had to do with questions about their own law. When I was informed that there was a plot against him, at once I decided to send him to you. I have told his accusers to make their case before you."
The soldiers followed their orders. That night they took Paul as far as Antitripus. The next day, the foot soldiers returned to Jerusalem. The horsemen continued on with Paul to Caesarea. They gave the commander's letter to Felix and turned Paul over to his care. Felix quickly read the letter. His curiosity was aroused.
"What province are you from?"
he asked the travel-weary apostle.
"I am from Cilicia. I was born in Tarsus,"
Paul answered.
"I will hear you when your accusers arrive,"
he answered abruptly. Then he gave orders for Paul to be kept under guard in the governor's headquarters. Paul was now under house arrest in Caesarea. He was thankful for a break from the hatred of the Jews. However, he had to wait 5 days for Ananias, the Jerusalem elders, and their lawyer Tertullus to arrive at the governor's palace. Paul was escorted into the judgment hall and stood before Felix and the council. Tertullus immediately launched into his accusations against Christ's faithful apostle.
Your Excellency, your wise leadership has brought us a long period of peace, and many necessary reforms are being made for the good of our country. We welcome this everywhere and at all times, and we are deeply grateful to you. I do not want to take up too much of your time, however, so I beg you to kindly listen to our brief account.
Paul was amused by the way Tertullus groveled before a former slave.
We found this man to be a dangerous nuisance. He starts riots among Jews all over the world and is a leader of the party of the Nazarenes.
Tertullus continued.
He also tried to defile the temple, and we arrested him. However, Commander Lysias came upon us and with great violence took him out of our hands. If you question this man, you yourself will be able to learn from him all the things that we are accusing him of.
The Jews joined in the accusation and said that all this was true. The governor motioned for them to be quiet. Felix then gave Paul the opportunity to speak. The apostle shifted to stand directly in line with the governor. After a quick mental prayer for guidance, he began his own defense.
I know that you have been a judge over this nation for many years, and so I am happy to defend myself before you,
stated Paul, who was certainly well qualified to represent himself in a court of law.
As you can find out for yourself, it was no more than 12 days ago that I went to Jerusalem to worship. The Jews did not find me arguing with anyone in the temple, nor did they find me stirring up the people, either in the synagogues or anywhere else in the city. Nor can they give you proof of the accusations they now bring against me.
He could tell that Felix was listening intently.
However, I do admit this to you. I worship the God of our ancestors by following that way, which they say is false. But I also believe in everything written in the law of Moses and the books of the prophets,
he said with passionate sincerity.
I have the same hope in God that these themselves have, namely, that all people, both the good and the bad, will rise from death.
Paul glanced quickly at the council. They were not happy.
And so I do my best always to have a clear conscience before God and people,
he assured Felix.
After being away from Jerusalem for several years, I went there to take some money to my own people and to offer sacrifices. It was while I was doing this that they found me in the temple after I had completed the ceremony of purification. There was no crowd with me and no disorder.
Essentially, Paul was showing Felix that it was the Jews who were stirring up the trouble.
But some Jews from the province of Asia were there. They themselves ought to come before you and make their accusations if they have anything against me. Or let these who are here tell what crime they found me guilty of when I stood before the council, except for the one thing I called out when I stood before them. I am being tried by you today for believing that the dead will rise to life.
Paul concluded. Felix, who was well informed about the way, brought the hearing to a close.
When the commander, Lysias, arrives,
he told them,
I will decide your case.
The governor then commanded a centurion to guard Paul and to allow him some freedom to walk about. The centurion was also to allow Paul's friends to visit and help take care of his needs. Paul did not waste his time waiting for Lysias to arrive in Caesarea. He was pleasantly surprised on the day Felix and his wife Drusilla came to visit him. asking him to teach them more about the faith in Jesus Christ. Drusilla was a Jewess, the youngest daughter of Herod Agrippa I. Paul taught them specifically about several elements of Christian character, righteousness, and temperance. He also taught them about the judgment to come. Felix trembled at hearing what Paul taught them. He could see that he did not exemplify the qualities of Christian character. His wife had left her first husband to marry him. He stopped Paul's instruction and told him that he would call upon him another day. Secretly, Felix hoped that Paul would offer him money to set him free. He called on Paul frequently, but Paul never took the hint. Lysias never arrived at Caesarea, so Paul's case was still pending when Felix got into political trouble in Judea. The emperor Nero replaced him with Porcius Festus. To please the Jews, Felix left Paul imprisoned. By this time, Paul had been under house arrest for 2 years in Caesarea. Do you suppose the 40 men who took the vow to not eat or drink anything until Paul was killed kept their vow? When Festus arrived in the province to replace Felix, he immediately went to Jerusalem after spending only 3 days at Caesarea. He wanted to make sure he started out on good terms with the Jews. While meeting with the high priest and the elders, he was informed about the criminal Paul, who had been protected by Felix. They requested that Festus return Paul to Jerusalem for trial. Of course, they intended to kill Paul on his way to Jerusalem. However, Festus was not a man who acted quickly to please anyone or any group of people.
"Paul should be kept at Caesarea. I will be returning there shortly,"
he told the council.
"I think it best that those among you who are able should come to Caesarea with me and accuse this man, if there be any wickedness in him."
The council members agreed. Festus did not return to Caesarea for 10 days. The day after he did, though, Paul was brought before his judgment seat. Paul walked into the judgment hall looking healthy and ready for a good debate. He stood with confidence in front of Festus and the council. The Jews brought all their same complaints about Paul. Not one could be proved.
"Neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar, have I offended anything at all,"
Paul told Festus in his own defense. Festus, seeking to win the Jews' favor, asked,
"Will you go up to Jerusalem and there be judged of these things before me?"
"I stand at Caesar's judgment seat where I ought to be judged,"
Paul answered.
"To the Jews have I done no wrong, as you know very well. For if I have committed anything worthy of death, then go ahead and execute me. But if I am innocent, then I have my rights."
But he was not finished.
"I appeal unto Caesar,"
he affirmed with conviction. The council was stunned. Even Festus was surprised by Paul's confidence and forthrightness. After he conferred with the council, he looked directly at Paul. With all the power of his office, he stated,
"Since you have appealed unto Caesar shall you go."
Paul was elated. He was finally headed to Rome. Soon after, King Agrippa and his sister Bernice came into Caesarea to welcome Festus. When they had been there more than a few days, Festus decided to tell the king about Paul's cause.
"There is a man named Paul, left in bonds by Felix,"
he began. He told the couple how the priests and elders of the Jews had accused Paul and petitioned Festus to condemn him. He said that Romans didn't simply execute people before their guilt is fairly proved and the accused have opportunity to defend themselves. Festus went on to explain what happened in the judgment hall and how Paul, a Roman citizen, had appealed to be judged by Caesar. He then told Agrippa that Paul was still under house arrest. Curious, Agrippa said,
I would also hear the man myself.
I'll set up a meeting for you in the morning,
Festus said, relieved. He did not know how to handle the problem, and he wanted no trouble with Rome. The next day, King Agrippa and Bernice entered the judgment hall with great pomp. Coming in with them were the chief captains and principal men of the city. At Festus's command, Paul was brought forth. Festus stood up to address King Agrippa and everyone present.
You see this man, about whom all the multitude of the Jews have demanded death,
he began.
But when I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death, and that he appealed to Caesar, I determined to send him. But since you are here, O King Agrippa, I have brought him before you so you can examine him. For it seems to me unreasonable to send a prisoner to Rome without signifying the specific crimes laid against him.
Paul looked at King Agrippa and fully understood that Jesus Christ wanted him to give witness to this man. Agrippa looked at Paul and knew immediately that there was something different and special about him.
I give you permission to defend yourself,
he said to Paul. Paul stretched out his hand toward the king, showing him honor and respect.
I think myself happy, King Agrippa, because I shall answer concerning all the accusations against me,
he began.
Especially because I know you to be expert in all customs and questions that are among the Jews.
Paul told the king about his Jewish background and how he had become a strict Pharisee.
And now, I stand and am condemned for having hope in the promise God made to our fathers,
he stated with a twinge of sadness. Paul explained to the king that the Jews were upset with him for teaching the resurrection of the dead, which was one of the main promises discussed throughout the Old Testament. But he said he himself had been guilty of persecuting those who believed as he did now. Then Paul explained about his calling at Damascus and how Jesus Christ had spoken to him directly, telling him that he was chosen to carry a message to the Gentiles, whom God also included in his plan of salvation for mankind. He explained that he obeyed, preaching throughout the Gentile world, that Jesus of Nazareth was the promised Messiah for all mankind, and that he was specifically called to teach the Gentiles to turn to God and do the works necessary for repentance. All those who did this would share in the promises of Israel.
It is for these causes that the Jews caught me in the temple and want to kill me,
Paul stated. Paul realized this was an incredible opportunity to preach to the king and his governor. He knew it would likely be his last opportunity to do so.
With God's help, though, I continue unto this day, witnessing to people of all types and races and backgrounds everywhere I go, simply explaining how we have seen exactly what the prophets and Moses said would happen, that Christ would suffer and that he would be the first to rise from the dead, and that he would show light to the people, even to the Gentiles.
At this point, Festus was overwhelmed.
Paul, you are beside yourself. much learning has made you mad,
he stated.
I am not mad, most noble Festus. I speak words of truth and soberness.
Paul stated firmly. He could tell that Agrippa had been moved by his appeal, and he motioned at him.
The king knows of these things, and I am speaking freely because I am convinced that none of these things are hidden from him.
Paul looked at the king again.
King Agrippa, do you believe the prophets?
He asked. Then, with conviction, he said,
I know you believe.
Agrippa looked at him silently for some time, soberly, transfixed, deep in thought. Then he blinked. His face relaxed, and a smile came over him.
Paul,
he said,
you almost persuade me to be a Christian.
I would to God that not only you, but all my listeners today could be what I am, barring these chains.
Paul exclaimed. When Paul said this, the king stood up. The governor and Bernice, and they that sat with them, also stood. Agrippa walked out a short distance away from Paul's hearing along with his advisers.
What shall we do with this? What do you think we shall?
I think this man does nothing worthy of death or of bonds.
I agree.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
They said among themselves. Agrippa said to Festus,
this man might have been set at liberty if he had not appealed unto Caesar.
It was certain. Paul was going to Rome. To be continued in our next episode, and continue the adventure by reading the Bible story. Find it under the Resources tab at pcg.church.